Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Daniel Baker. Joining us today, we have Julia Gutierrez, Vice President of Education at Compliance Alliance. Julia develops curriculums and presentations, as well as presents at various schools and seminars around the country, both live and in a live stream hybrid format. Julia adds over 20 years of experience in the financial sector to the Compliance Alliance team. She began her career in banking in 2000 while receiving her Bachelor of Business Administration degree in finance from the University of Alabama. Her compliance knowledge and understanding derive from her combined experience in community banks and consulting. Julia served as a risk management and BSA officer, assisted in the development of an enterprise-wide risk management and compliance program for a de novo institution, and assisted in the compliance remediation efforts for an institution who was referred to the DOJ. She's held positions in retail and branch management and was a senior compliance advisor for a large regulatory compliance consulting firm. Julia, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dan. I'm so excited to be here today.
Well, we're excited that you decided to join us for this episode. This is actually a two-part episode, and today's going to be part one of two. But before we get into that, I always like to ask, what was it that got you started in the financial sector? What led you to this point?
Well, Dan, I think like a lot of people, I sort of fell into banking, if you will. I graduated from high school and, you know, was waiting to start college, and I had someone approach me asking if I wanted to come work at the bank as a teller. And I thought, you know, this will be fun. This will be, you know, something fun to do for the summer. And then it just kind of carried over. And I did that throughout college and started doing some different things within the bank, started working in some different areas within the bank. And early on, I can remember, you know, folks talking about how long they had been in banking. And some would say 10, 20, 30 years. And that just seemed like an eternity to me at, you know, 18, 19 years old. And I thought, there's no way I'll be here this long. And here we are, 20 plus years later, and I'm still in the industry, but certainly an industry that I've grown to really love and truly enjoy. So.
Well, you're right. That does sound very much like a lot of us. I mean, I myself kind of fell into the industry. So many people kind of just do. You do have quite the experience in the industry. I mean, you've got different positions as like a risk management officer, senior regulatory compliance advisor, and several other positions. I'd love to be able to dig into what you did in those roles, if that's all right. So as a risk management officer, what did you do? Was that your first position in the compliance side of things, or were you in compliance before then?
I was actually in compliance pretty early on in my banking career. Like I said, I started off, working as a teller, and I really enjoyed that. You get to interact with the customers, and, I worked in various positions on the branch side, new accounts, branch manager, worked a little bit in the back office side in lending, and a position came open in compliance It started off with Humda, of all places, and it was something I really enjoyed doing. And I thought, you know, this was a great place for me within the bank, and it just kind of grew from there. And I just took on some other roles and was always trying to add some, you know, new responsibilities and, just learn new things. But compliance is always my niche. It was always an area that I just enjoyed the most. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you're fine. I was just going to ask. So if someone was looking to transition into compliance, because I know you said you went from the lending and back office over to compliance. Was that the transition you made? So you were in lending and then you transitioned into the Humda side of things?
It was. I started off, helping out with the Humda scrub, and that just kind of, piqued the interest. And then, several folks said, did you enjoy that? Was that something you like doing? You know, because it's not necessarily an area that a lot of people love to do. All these different areas of banking, one great thing is, you can move around and still stay within the industry. Mm-hmm. But there are certainly areas that, are just more enjoyable for folks than others. And I think, when it comes to compliance, if you are kind of that sort of rule follower type of personality, just somebody that is very precise, somebody that's very detail oriented. I definitely think it's an area that, you know, you may enjoy. And I think that's what I liked about it. It's, there's a lot of gray areas when you get into compliance, that you learn, but, you know, starting out, you really, it's a lot of black and white, a lot of, you know, making sure you're crossing your T's and dotting mm-hmm. your I's. And that was something that really fit me. And so I think if somebody's, you know, kind of on the fence about, you know, where they fit into the realm of banking, if that sort of fits your personality, if you sort of have that personality where you're very detail oriented, I think it's something that's enjoyable. As much as I enjoyed working with customers, you know, and interacting on a daily basis, this was just mm-hmm. a role that, you know, it just fit me so much more on the compliance side. But it was something that I sort of took baby steps into. But I will say one thing I've learned is that everything that I did up to my roles in compliance and even up until today were all stepping stones and have all been important roles in you know, helping to add to that success, really helping me to understand, you know, how things work. A lot of times if we haven't worked in certain roles, things sound good from an idea standpoint, or it sounds great on paper, but you know, when you actually go to put those things into practice, sometimes
it's not as a little bit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So I can definitely think about, you know, how is this going to impact, you know, the people that are actually doing this on a day-to-day basis. So I certainly think that gave me that edge, you know, when I got into the compliance side of things.
So when you were stepping into it, so it sounds like your very first exposure to really the compliance side of things, besides some of the lending things you did, was the HMDA project that you, did you volunteer to be on it, or was it kind of assignment like, hey, look, go help that person on this project?
It was a combination. I like to say I was voluntold. Okay. but it worked out great. Here I am.
It worked out great. I mean, just laid the path for everything else.
Absolutely.
So at that point, did you already have your degree when you stepped into the compliance side, or were you still working on your degree?
I did already have my degree by that point. You know, like I said, I did various things within the branch side of banking. And when I graduated from college, one of my first jobs within the bank were the branch manager. And, you know, that gave me an opportunity to get into the lending a little bit. So I did that for a couple of years. And then, you know, the compliance came just a little ways down the road.
Well, thank you very much for letting me kind of pick your brain. I'm always curious about how people take like that first initial step, because for me, it was completely different. For me, like I was very much front of the house, but then I did law school, and then I did in a law firm, and then I transitioned into to officially the compliance side of things here at Compliance Alliance. So that's interesting to hear that you did it by increments, like working gradually, got introduced to a project and then transferred in. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I know in your current position, Julia, you're the vice president of education. So I know you do a lot of traveling, you do a lot of classes, and you do a lot of seminars, webinars, all sorts of different things. Mm-hmm. I'd like to know, how do you develop or what is your process for creating these trainings? Is it just like, oh, look, another one released, and then you spend hours reading through that and then you generate from there? Or how do you develop an effective training?
Well, I think one of the first things that I like to do, or what sort of seems to be my system, you know, number one, we do a lot of training, provide a lot of training for our members, you know, that's required training. And, you know, we have things, there are topics within the bank that have to be covered every year, or topics that, you know, have to be covered based on positions. And so we like to try to develop training that's specific for that. But when it comes to the new stuff that's coming out, typically, we know something's coming down the pipeline. That's one thing with compliance. When you're in these compliance related roles, whether you're working as a compliance officer or an advisor, you really want to make sure that you're staying abreast of, you know, what's going on in the compliance landscape, so that, you know, mm-hmm. you're not the last person to find out about it, and you're not surprised, or we don't have members asking us a question that we at least don't have some idea of what's going on. So I like to kind of make sure that I'm watching to see what's coming down the regulatory pipeline. And when that starts happening, I start, you know, looking at the guidance. I try to look at the regulatory guidance, you know, as soon as it's coming out, and stay up to date on that, and, you know, put that on my radar to keep up with it, so it isn't so daunting to, you know, take something that's, you know, a new change, or, you know, a large act that's coming out, and trying to, like, you know, mm-hmm. look at it with a fresh set of eyes, like I've never looked at it before. So that's one of the first things I do, is just kind of watch things as they're coming down the pipeline. So when it's actually something that's effective and we need to look at training, I already have an overview, a general idea of what I'm looking at. And then I kind of go in and break down the regulation. And I think that that's one of the easiest ways to start developing your training programs, is to, you know, look through the regulation and see what the requirements are, what's the important things for the bank to take away. And I break those up by the different areas of the bank. If I know it's something very compliance related, I, you know, make sure I organize that so we can put together training for, you know, our compliance folks. If it's something that's going to be, you know, very branch related or lending related, I try to make sure that we sort of break it down into sections like that. So whatever information we're providing, you know, is applicable to whoever's using that training. I try not to do sort of a one size fits all. Right. I don't think that our, you know, I don't think our branch manager needs the same training as our compliance officer. So I think that that's, and I think that's a really important way to kind of go in and look at things, is to, you know, like I said, have an overview of what's going on and then to break it down by the different areas of, you know, who it applies to and what's important.
In your previous roles, did you find yourself drafting or formatting education for branch employees?
I did. So I've served as a risk management officer, and in that role, you know, among a number of different things, training was part of that. So I developed a lot of the training. I've been a BSA officer as well. So I developed training, you know, for that function. So this was something that wasn't completely new to me when I joined the Compliance Alliance team. This is something that I was familiar with already. And I always enjoyed the education piece of it. I always enjoyed developing, you know, that curriculum. You know, I enjoyed breaking down the regulations and, you know, putting it into pieces of who it would apply to. I enjoyed taking it and saying, you know, this is going to apply to our frontline staff. This is going to apply to, you know, our lending staff. This is for the compliance people. So that was something that I was familiar with kind of coming into this role. And, you know, in this role now, it's just really given me an opportunity to, you know, take all of that experience I've had over the years, take, you know, that training that I did for financial institutions within the bank, and you know, just really ramp it up and spend a lot more time doing it. And it's something that's enjoyable.
So in my experience in the banking sector, there's several different types of trainings. There's the trainings where you just go and you listen to someone talk. There's the trainings that come across your computer and are like practically a video game, and then there's the trainings where you're just reading and you're taking tests and other formats and structures kind of those ones. Is there a kind of training that you think is like the most effective to communicate? I mean, obviously a lot of it's going to depend on your specific audience, but is there a training that you've seen be the most effective or the most useful?
I think, you know, I think you need a variety of different you know, methods of training, and everybody learns differently. I think things that are really important to have is, you know, things that are real life. And that's something we try to apply when we're doing training, when we do webinars, if we're doing in-person training, we always try to give real life examples, because what better way to remember something than to remember things that you don't want to do, someone else's experience. We never want to be, you know, that person. In my roles throughout the years, I've seen a number of different interesting things take place. And I've certainly learned some things that I know I don't want to do. And when you learn those things, they stick with you. So I always try to share those stories when we're going through training, because I think that that's a way for people to, you know, grasp that knowledge and help them retain it. I know that, you know, online training, webinars, those are a great way to kind of get a group training going to ensure everybody's participated. It's a great and easy way to monitor who all has participated. You know, who all can we check off that, hey, they've received their training. I really enjoy in-person training because it tends to be more interactive. Folks tend to be more willing to ask questions and get more engaged and tend to understand and grasp things just a little bit differently. But there isn't a one-size-fits-all on training either. Everybody learns differently. So we certainly try to, you know, provide different platforms of training, whether it's online, in person, and even with our online and in-person training, we try to add some, you know, flair to it. We try to, you know, play games. We've done trivia. We've done group activities. So we certainly try to, you know, step up the game and add some extra there to make it a little bit more exciting, because I know everyone doesn't have a love for compliance that I do. So I want to make it as fun, enjoyable, and interactive as possible.
So really just as engaging as possible. I totally agree with that.
Absolutely. Engaging would be the key word there.
So I'd like to transition a little bit. So Julie, I know that you are currently active in the National Guard. Is that correct?
Army Reserves.
Army Reserves. Sorry, I said National Guard. No. Army Reserve.
No, they're really closely related, so it's totally fine. just a general National Guard has some state obligations as well, where the Army Reserves is strictly federal.
Okay. I always get those two mixed up. So I apologize about mixing that, but thank you for your service. But I wanted to take the opportunity, because we don't get a ton of military all the time on the podcast. So I wanted to take the opportunity to pick your brain about SCRA and MLA. Like, everybody I know is impacted, at least in the compliance side of things, is impacted in some way, shape, or form by SCRA and MLA, and they have to touch it at some point while they're in compliance. Would you mind giving us just a brief overview of what those are, of what those two things and how they impact you?
Sure. So really, the SCRA and MLA, they're two acts that just extend really a number of protection to both service members and sometimes, in some cases, their dependents. So, you know, there's a number of different protections. Some are, you know, really closely related to banking compliance. Some, you know, not as focused on you know, financial institutions, but still protections nonetheless. The most probably well-known has to do with those interest rate caps. So it's, you know, important that financial institutions are aware of the protections, especially those protections that apply to, you know, the banking side of things, and that they're actually implementing those, you know, in a compliant manner. But I would definitely say those interest rate caps are the ones that our service members tend to be most familiar with, and you know, what we seem to be most familiar with, even on the banking side.
So have you seen those protections actually make a difference? Because sometimes I feel like there's lots of protection extended, and sometimes I feel like they're really effective. Sometimes maybe not so much. Have you seen those ones make a difference?
I actually have. You know, SCRA and MLA, these are two acts that are near and dear to my heart. You know, one, myself being, you know, in the service on the reserve side, my husband's active duty. I come from a, you know, long military family that's, you know, has that military background. So I've certainly seen, you know, some really good things come from these acts and these protections. You know, and it's important to remember that, you know, you want to comply with them. You know, one, it's the right thing to do, but two, it's the law, and you want to ensure that you're in compliance, because even if you fail to provide these protections, if you're, you know, not understanding the regulations in their entirety, this is something that can come back to bite you much later down the road after you've gone on and moved on and forgotten about it. And that's something that, you know, I've seen myself is randomly a couple of years ago, my husband got a check in the mail, and it was from a large institution that I'm sure has a very large compliance department. We thought it was kind of interesting, and we were both like, okay, we're not sure. Is this a scam? What's going on? So neither of us wanted to cash a check. We had not had an account at this bank in a number of years. And we reached out to the institution, and it was actually, it was a payment from this financial institution that failed to comply with SCRA in its entirety. And what I mean by that is, you know, like I said, most of us are most familiar with that interest rate cap. A lot of us don't realize is with that interest rate cap, that doesn't mean, you know, you start today and move forward. That means it goes retroactive. And so that was one of the things that happened, is it didn't go retroactive at the time. And, you know, it didn't forgive all of the interest. It kind of just forgave what they thought that they should and reduced the interest rate. And so, you know, surprise, a few years later, you know, we got that surprise in the mail. Is it nice? You know, it was a nice surprise for us, but I'm sure it wasn't a great surprise for the institution that was involved. So, you know, my advice with SCRA and MLA is just to really make sure that your financial institution, especially your compliance department, understands those protections in their entirety, realizing that it is not just, you know, hey, let's move forward. These protections are just from today for the service member, but really making sure that there are no retroactive protections or even protections that are in place after the service member has left the military.
And I'm assuming that you would recommend like the best way to comply is have like an effective policy in place and have people who are knowledgeable and understand like how to comply with that. Is that accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important to make sure that, you know, you have a military lending policy in place or, you know, a separate SCRA, MLA policy in place. But if it's something that you haven't looked at in a while, you still want to go and take a look at those regulations to make sure that you've updated, you know, your internal policy. I think that's what we see most often with financial institutions is there isn't an intent to harm the consumer in any way. There isn't an intent to harm the service member in any way. It's something that, you know, it's in place and, you know, we haven't heard anything about it, heard, you know, no news. So we assume it's good news. And so we sometimes forget to go in there and make those updates and make those changes. And that's where it tends to, you know, get us in trouble sometimes. So if it's an area you haven't looked at in a while, you know, I encourage banks to go in, look at those policies, make sure that they're up to date, make sure they include that updated information. An example here would be Space Force. You know, this is, you know, new area that's added. You know, we look at policies and review them all the time where it's just something as simple as, hey, make sure that you're updating this and including Space Force in here. So it's tiny little things like that can become big deals if we don't, you know, if we don't stay on top of them. So, certainly look and see if there's any changes or anything that needs to be updated in the policy. But absolutely. And training, you know, you want to make sure, of course, training, we can't leave, you know, without talking about that. You want to make sure, right, we don't want to forget that. You have to make sure that you're training your staff, especially when we see a change in staff, if we see turnover, if we've got, you know, newer folks that aren't quite as experienced in these areas, you want to make sure that they're trained because that's going to go a long way.
So I love the fact that you mentioned like making sure policies and whatnot are updated, because we're actually going to cover that in episode 2 of this podcast. But unfortunately today for today's episode, we are out of time. So Julia, thank you very much for joining us for episode 1 here. We appreciate your knowledge and wisdom as ever.
Thank you very much for having me.
For the rest of you listening in, that's Banking Matters.